Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's March the 13th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's out of Normal, Illinois. And then later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Well, in agricultural news, a potential BSE case in the United States. How will Japan react? A potential tax reprieve for wooded acres in the state of Illinois, and the EPA proposes Clean Air Act rules for ethanol plants. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in this half hour. And we'll hear today about rotational grazing and how it can be used to improve pasture efficiency. Hey, and don't forget, at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Kansas City on this Monday afternoon, wheat futures finished 19 cents lower at 428. The Chicago wheat settled 14.5 cents lower for the March contract at 360, and the May futures were off 14 at 367 and one half. March corn at 220.5 in Chicago, off 5.5 cents today. The May futures down as well, 228.75, off 5.75. July down 5.75 at 239.25. And the Dease contract off a nickel today at $2.58. Soybeans March contract 573.5. They were down 4.75. The May futures at 584.5, down 4.75. And July soybeans at 595.75 were off 4.75. November beans $6.11 a bushel were down 3.75 for the day. March bean meal at 172.70. Finished 30 cents higher. The March bean oil at 23.48, down 37. From the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle finished at 102.25. They were up 45.5 cents today, or rather 45 cents even. The live cattle finished the April contract up 17.5 cents at $83.62 a hundredweight, and the April lean hogs at $59.72 were $1.15 higher for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, it sounds like you're going to make the trip here to Champaign from Bloomington this evening. That's a good thing. And we'll be looking forward to having you at the Champaign County Extension Office, which is also where the Farm Bureau building is here in Champaign County.
Yeah, it's always a great honor to come down and visit for everybody there. And you guys, Marketing Club always puts on a great program.
Indeed, they do. Dave Dickey will be hosting that program. I'll be in the building, of course, but it's odd. Every time we have one of these in Champaign County, I'm also always at an Extension Council meeting on that night, so I'll be in the building. I'll just be in another room. I'll drop in and see you this evening and see how things are going with the Marketing Club. Speaking of that, 19 cents, the drop in Kansas City, 14 cents in Chicago for the wheat. This all just a little bit of rain in the Southwest and, well, quite a bit of rain here in the Midwest.
Well, yeah, it's a weather market. We've got quite a bit of weather premium in it there, and basically the funds loaded up to the gills with just huge long positions, and that's mainly the funds, as we know, as the moving average followers and technical followers, not counting the index funds. We basically seen a better chance, or the best chance, for about the last 6 months, it seems, for rain, especially in the far western belt, anywhere from a quarter to three quarters of an inch. As you get in the central belt there, up through central Texas into Oklahoma and Kansas, anywhere from a half to 1.5 inches of rain. And so they're going to be in a position where they're going to have a shot at it. The trade's anticipating that, so we'll see if that develops or not. But also, too, just world wheat demand is slow for U.S. wheat. Continue to talk Iraq looking for wheat, or India looking wheat, but the U.S. name does not come up. I wouldn't be surprised that Egypt surfaces here fairly quickly. They've sort of been on the back burner, per se, and they'll probably be out buying some U.S. wheat with this break here.
Kind of interesting to watch the rest of the board react. Corn and soybeans both down in sympathy, but the beans holding on much better than the corn today, down 4.75 in the nearby March contract for the beans. November's were off 3.75. Dease corn, on the other hand, down a nickel in response.
Yeah, beans held in there quite well compared to the other commodities. But I think there's some spread unwinding. There's a chunk of the trade is long wheat, short beans on a spread there, and I think we saw some unwinding there. Also, too, beans have approached the lower end of their trading range here, which warrants maybe some buying until May's probably take out this 580 area. You know, we could probably continue to see them stay in a trading range. And, of course, corn lower on spillover selling from the wheat pit, too. But also, too, in the bean complex, we saw some other spreading, unwinding of the meal oil spread. Meal was unchanged, and some of the bean oil contracts were down over 40 cents. And that's kind of a hard hit in the bean oil, especially with bean oil, so-called the energy product here, and crude oil, and the energy's up higher today with bean oil down.
Interesting to watch what's been happening in USDA after the WASDE numbers were released Friday morning. And I'm hoping you can help us relate to this to how the marketplace for beans might work over the next all week or so. Keith Collins, who's the chief ag economist there, suggesting that the 10 million bushel increase in the carryover from 555 million to 565 million was a response to lower on the exports and not a response because Europe was using fewer beans or other places, I suppose, potentially China, but because of avian flu, but rather that that had been picked up by Brazil and that their exports were expected to be 10 million bushels higher as opposed to ours. So how do you figure all of that into the marketplace, or is it just sort of a blip through the process?
Well, no, longer term, you know, the report's reflecting that that we got big Brazilian Argentina crop, and those beans are going to come on the world market, and typically that's at the expense of the U.S. beans. When you look at their production prospects now, I mean, we can argue 1 or 2 million metric tons here, 1 or 2 million metric tons there, but for the most part, we're on course for them to produce a record crop and add to record world supplies in through here. But when the bottom line's all said and done, we're going to continue to have ample supplies of beans and oil seeds worldwide. Why the market's not at $4 right now is I think the trade is just scared to death of the commodity funds coming into the marketplace. If you go back in history a little bit here, they really did not start trading new crop options on the beans here until about 2 months ago. I mean, they were on the board, but we had producers and traders try to enter the new crop options in the beans, and the traders wouldn't even touch them. I mean, if you wanted to buy something, you had to pay 10 cents up for it. And if you wanted to sell an option, you took a 10 cent hit on the downside. I mean, they were trading the spreads in there. Now the volume's starting to pick up a little bit. But it just says that the trade is sort of scared to death of the bean market, not ready to press it. Therefore, while the traders came in every day and sold the market, by the end of the day, they had to buy that position back because the market wouldn't break. You know, there's some underlying supportive features out there. We've not seen that yet or not. But when you look at the big picture as a producer, it tells you to be cautious beans.
Kind of interesting over in the Mercantile Exchange. Pretty rough day on Friday, turned around today. And they moved higher that despite the fact that over the weekend we learned of another potential BSE positive cow. In fact, just a few minutes ago, starting at 2 o'clock, the chief veterinarian at APHIS, Dr. John Clifford, had some more information that Dave Dickey is passing along to me. There's a positive result, of course, in the Western blot screening test for mad cow, that equals the third positive nationally. The IHC test is still pending, and that will be released later this week. The IHC, of course, the kind of the gold standard of whether an animal has BSE or not, so it's still not determined whether this animal has BSE. It is said to be from a farm in central Alabama. That animal was buried on the farm. Further work to discover the herd of origin is pending because the animal was on the Alabama farm less than a year, so it came from another place originally. It did not enter the human or the feed chain, and the attending vet suggested the animal was upwards of 10 years of age, but that has not yet been confirmed. Tissue studies are underway to pin the age of the animal down with a bit of greater accuracy. So the animal, if it was older than 10 years, would put it before the feed ban, I believe, put into place in 1997 here in the United States, potentially 98, I don't recall which year, that ban ruminant-to-ruminant feeding. So some possibilities there on BSE and another positive cow here in the U.S., but that has yet to be determined. The Mercantile Exchange took all of this in pretty good stride today.
Yeah, we started lower. There were some calls as much as $1, $1.25 lower. We didn't quite get that low or stay that low, but the market sort of held the recent lows in there. We've been in a sharp downtrend since January. You know, the fats market lost over $12 a hundred. You know, if the market oversold as it is and sort of this bearish news, it sort of puts us in a position to stabilize until we see what some of these tests say. But, you know, this is just number three for the U.S. The Canadians, I think they've got a little bit worse of a record or concern than here beef in the U.S. Then you take our Asian counterparts. You take Japan. You know, we're talking over 28 cases in that country, and they're just running rapid with mad cow compared to what we have here. And they turn right around and want to ban our beef. But I think the American consumer has decided, you know, until somebody dies from it locally, we see a more of a major outbreak, that probably U.S. beef is the safest in the world at this point in time.
Well, we appreciate you being with us today, Kurt.
Very good. Enjoyed it, Todd.
Thanks much. Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Monday afternoons. You can also listen to him talk to Dave Dickey on Monday mornings on the Opening Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
At the bottom of the hour, a meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM580's own Mike Solis says that for this afternoon and tonight, in the northern and central sections of Indiana, it'll be mostly cloudy. There'll be some scattered flurries in central Illinois and southern Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy, and southern Illinois, partly cloudy. Lows, he says, will range from 21 in far northwestern Indiana to 35 in the far south. And tomorrow, Mike says, in northern and eastern Indiana, mix of clouds and sunshine. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 38 in northeastern Indiana to 53 in far southern Illinois. By the way, my unofficial rain gauge over the weekend had about an inch and a half of rain in it. That on top of the inch and eight-tenths that I had on Wednesday night of last week. There is a tornado watch in effect until 4 o'clock this afternoon, by the way, for the northeastern part of Indiana. Other watches, too. Flood watches in effect for portions of central and southern Indiana. A wind advisory in effect for much of central, east central, and southern southeastern Illinois through early this evening. And for much of the northern Illinois areas and much of Indiana through midnight tonight. And we do have some of those counties that we can list off for you for the wind advisory. This is in effect for Champaign, Christian, Clark, Coles, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Logan, Macon, McLean, Moultrie, Piatt, Sangamon, Shelby, and Vermilion counties. Dave Dickey's here now with the news.
In agricultural news, Japanese news sources were reporting over the weekend that May is the earliest Japan will drop its latest ban on U.S. beef, and that was before USDA announced on Saturday that it sent samples of a cow to its testing lab in Ames, Iowa, for further examination after a rapid screening test proved inconclusive for mad cow disease. USDA says it should have test results back this week and that the animal did not enter the human nor animal feed chains. Meanwhile, USDA is continuing to work on answering a list of 20 questions that Japanese officials have posed regarding USDA's investigation of Atlantic veal and lamb, the Brooklyn-based processor that sent banned vertebrae parts to Tokyo in January. And in other BSE news, Hong Kong has suspended beef imports from Swift Beef Company after a bone shard was discovered in a shipment of that company's beef. Owners of wooded property in Illinois who have been concerned about a tax change appear to be getting a reprieve. Sean Crawford reports.
When the state first announced it wanted to enforce decades-old changes to how timberland is assessed, many landowners foresaw skyrocketing property tax bills. After heated discussion, lawmakers have agreed to what appears to be a compromise, a measure before the Illinois legislature would set up a task force to further study the matter. State Revenue Department Director Brian Hamer says his agency will wait until the review is complete.
And we will not take any further action until the task force completes its work.
It's unclear how long that could take. The state had raised concerns some owners of timberland are getting by without paying as much in taxes as the law calls for. Estimates indicate as many as two-thirds of county assessors calculate the tax bills for such property too low. But some lawmakers say it's unfair to suddenly bump assessments by as much as 30 times current levels. I'm Sean Crawford.
A 60-day comment period has started on an Environmental Protection Agency proposal that would apply the same air pollution requirements for ethanol plants that produce ethanol for fuel or human consumption. The proposed rule has been published in the Federal Register and can be viewed on the EPA's website at www.epa.gov. The former Farm Service Agency Administrator for Programs says producers should expect that at least some county FSA offices will be permanently closed. Mike Yost was named Administrator of USDA's Foreign Ag Service last week, but before cleaning out his desk at FSA, he acknowledged that closing county FSA offices will be driven from the bottom up.
People have to realize we have 36 FSA offices in the country today that have no full-time staff. None. Zero. We have 144 with one person in them full-time. We have 270 or 80 with two people in them, and almost half of our offices have three or less. We have an office structure that goes back to the 1930s, and we're in an environment here in this town, this agency, this department, all of government in an era of diminishing or scarce resources, and clearly we have to do business differently.
The Farm Service Agency last year scrapped its controversial FSA Tomorrow plan, which would have closed over a third of county FSA offices after a congressional outcry against it. And the Senate Budget Committee has turned a deaf ear on the president's request for additional cuts in agriculture. The resolution largely ignored the administration's proposal for further reductions in program payments and tightening of payment limits. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to join Dave tonight at the Champaign County Farm Bureau building. That's also the Extension building here in Champaign County. At 7 o'clock, when Pete Manhart, Wayne Nelson, Chuck Shelby, Clayton Pope will all take the stage at the Champaign Corn and Soybean Marketing Club meeting. This is absolutely free. No reservations are required. Join them this evening at 7 o'clock at the Champaign County Farm Bureau building.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Well, cattle producers and dairy farmers with limited access to pasture can rotate paddocks to make their operations look bigger. Up next, more on rotational grazing with a University of Illinois Extension livestock specialist. There are many reasons for cattle producers to adopt a pasture management program, sometimes called rotational grazing. Mostly, it's because it improves the yield of forage, says University of Illinois Extension beef management and livestock specialist Justin Sexton.
Continuous grazing, or just grazing one paddock, only utilizes 35 to 50% of the available forage that's grown. Just by using rotational grazing, where we would move every 7 days to a new paddock, we can increase our forage production to 50 to 60%, almost doubling essentially the land that we have or the forage yield. It also improves forage quality, allowing for higher gains per acre. Manure distribution is much better, and we will see much less overgrazing with rotational grazing.
It is a flexible pasture management tool, too. If the acreage is small or there is a greater need for higher quality forage, the animals, beef, cattle, or dairy, can be moved from one paddock to the other on a daily basis. If not, the rotation can be much longer.
Number of acres per animal is extremely flexible. It depends on how much work you want to do, and that dairy producers would benefit by rotating animals every day and may only graze a strip that 30 animals could consume, you know, in 12 hours in between milkings. Whereas a beef producer, where we would have maybe an 8-paddock system where they would rotate once a week, may be the best use of labor and land.
Those rotations can shrink and expand with the seasons and the number of animals. As a general rule of thumb, the forage being grazed should be between 8 and 12 inches tall. Well, cattle have a built-in ruler for that. It's about the distance from the end of their muzzle to their eyes. A pasture should never be grazed lower than about 4 inches. By rotating paddocks, the pasture stay in better condition all season long, and consequently, so do the animals. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, you can learn more about pasture management from the University of Illinois by visiting the PastureNet website. Just type Illini PastureNet into your favorite search engine. Joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Wyatt Muse of the Andersons here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Wyatt.
Afternoon, Todd.
Quite a day in Chicago and even a bigger day in Kansas City for the wheat. Futures were down sharply. What were the calls about in your office?
A lot of people were asking why things were down, which is a very good question, and a lot of it came as a result of the increased moisture across the Midwest. But I think more so than the rain that we had is fund liquidation. The funds liquidated about 10 million bushels of corn today and 17.5 million bushels of soybeans. So there's quite a bit of heavy selling there on the funds, and you know that weighed heavy on the market.
And are you able to determine whether they were, and I know you said liquidation, but are they actually liquidating at this point, or are they taking a new position in the marketplace?
They're still liquidating. As far as I can tell at this point, you know, they were a lot longer than 2,000 contracts of corn and 3,500 contracts of soybeans. So it would take them several days of the activity that they've been doing today to get to a point where they are reestablishing positions.
All in all, probably not unexpected in your office?
No, it's not really unexpected at all because, you know, they can't just buy and hold on to it forever. So they're going to have to get in and out of this, especially, you know, if they plan to stay in the corn, soybean, wheat market. They don't really make any money if they just get a position and hang on to it. They really need to jump in and out in order to, you know, make that work for them.
And your bids for the day?
213 cash corn, fall delivery 237, cash soybeans 564, and fall delivery 590.
Wyatt, thanks much.
Mm.
Wyatt Muse is with the Andersons here in Champaign County. Somebody from that office joins us each and every Monday here on the Closing Market Report. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Your local newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Governor Rob Blagojevich says he'll assess the damage from last night's Springfield tornado further before deciding whether to ask for federal assistance. The governor says Illinois residents should count their blessings because the storm that swept through central Illinois last night didn't cause any fatalities. Blagojevich is in Springfield this afternoon to assess the damage. He plans a flyover in a helicopter to see the devastation. More than 20 people received minor injuries in the storm, which tore the roofs off of buildings in Springfield and sent traffic lights and utility poles crashing to the ground. A defense lawyer says a man charged with drowning 3 children at Clinton Lake actually tried more than once to rescue the children. Today's opening arguments mark the first time Maurice Legrone Jr.'s defense was revealed. Prosecutors told jurors today they should use their common sense to convict Legrone. Administrators in the Champaign Unit 4 schools say they've managed to find a location for a new Northside Elementary School, but they won't release any details until tonight's school board meeting. The school is part of a $66 million bond proposal up for a referendum at next week's elections. Unit 4 had pledged to build a new school somewhere north of University Avenue to meet the terms of a consent decree written to address racial equity issues. Supporters of the decree say the new school should be built close enough to underserved communities to meet the spirit of that agreement. Two top Republican legislators in Indiana say a tentative compromise has been reached on Governor Mitch Daniels' highway plan and the authority it would give the governor to lease the Indiana toll road. Representative Randy Boer of Fort Wayne and Senate Appropriations Chairman Robert Meeks of LaGrange both say they've reached a compromise that they believe can pass both the Indiana House and Senate. Boer says he believes the governor will also support the compromise. The details haven't been revealed. Toyota is ramping up its presence in Indiana. The Japanese automaker will begin building its top-selling Camry sedan at the Subaru plant in Lafayette. Toyota will employ about 1,000 workers at the plant, where it plans a $230 million investment in the new assembly line. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL. Meteorologist John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, is away at this hour, but Dave Dickey, your director of agricultural programming, managed to talk to him earlier today. We have a portion of that conversation for you right now.
I want to start by asking you to give us an accounting of all the weather we had over the weekend in terms of what it meant for ground moisture content and catch-up and that kind of thing. I know that particularly in the western Corn Belt, they were a little bit behind.
Oh, no question about that. And not only over the weekend, but really so far this month, you know, we have been in a very wet pattern across the entire Midwest. And that is true basically from all areas from Iowa right across to Ohio. And about the only area that had missed out on the significant precip up until today had been southern Minnesota and eastern South Dakota. And they're in the midst of a major snowstorm and major moisture across those areas right now. So far in March, we've had precipitation totals range from 150 to as much as 300% of normal. And so we have seen an increase in both topsoil and subsoil moisture so far in March.
We should expect that to catch up on those Palmer Index charts at some point.
Oh, no question. And with the fact that we've had a couple of weeks of, you know, wet conditions, and these wet conditions have come at a time when we really haven't had any permafrost, which sometimes in early March you can have permafrost across hefty chunks of the Midwest. And with the warmth that we've had, we certainly haven't had that issue in any portion of the belt. So everything that has fallen has percolated into the soil, and so it's of benefit. And so no question that we've seen an improving situation on all soil moisture fronts here over the past couple of weeks, and we expect that trend to continue as well.
You mentioned the snowstorm going on in southern and central Minnesota and eastern South Dakota. 6 to 12 inch levels?
In general, yeah.
Hmm. And temperatures this week will begin to trend cooler. I don't suppose that's very hard to say, given how warm it was over the weekend. But
yeah, it'll trend cooler, and really what we're going to is we're going to get back to more normal-type situations. I think normal is something that we've kind of lost track of since we've been so abnormal over the past couple of months from a temperature perspective. But we will trend back to more normal-type levels as we go through the next 3 to 5 days, which is a heck of a lot cooler than what we've had over the past few days. But it's kind of normal as to, you know, what we typically get during the middle portion of March.
Looks like the Corn Belt wasn't the only place getting rain over the weekend. Looks like, based on what I can tell, it might have rained in about 55% of Brazil over the weekend.
It did, and with the rains that we saw across Brazil, there was more in some of the southern areas than up in the northern areas. But really, at this stage of the game, it's a kind of situation here right now where the rains are not widespread nor heavy enough to cause any kind of real problems across the region. These rains were pretty much came after a stretch of dry weather last week, so we're not having any kind of difficulty with fieldwork operations or harvest activity. And from a pattern standpoint upcoming, it looks like these rain bands going through will be interspersed by fair, dry conditions. So really no sign of any kind of total bog down on harvest operations in either northern or southern Brazil. And the pace of harvest continues to be ahead of schedule. And we should continue to make pretty good progress as we get our big crops brought in over the next month or so down there.
Do you look for a couple of rain bands to move across Argentina as well?
It's a very similar pattern in Argentina with bands moving through every 5 or 6 days, but interspersed by fair, dry conditions. So with those kind of that kind of a pattern, it's the kind of situation where you wouldn't get any kind of real bog down in harvest operations. So pretty steady pace in Argentina as well.
That was Chesapeake Energy's John Davis speaking with your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, about the agricultural weather. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good afternoon, and be sure to join Dave tonight at the Champaign County Farm Bureau Building, 7 o'clock, for another one of the free WILL AM 580 Ag Outlook panels. Have a good afternoon.